Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only one and only progressive talk station, and thank goodness for it. We had a tremendous first hour. Really great calls, smart listeners. I'm proud to have you guys out there listening to me. These were some really great calls, and we're going to pick that conversation up, the conversation about whether or not we can call what happened to Osama bin Laden justice with David Swanson. Get your calls ready. He is a super smart guy. We want to continue this conversation. This isn't a one-way thing. This is all of us having this conversation, and I think David Swanson from davidswanson.org is going to be able to shed some really interesting light on this, but we're going to take a break. We're going to cleanse our palates a little bit because we are huge single-payer supporters here at Mad as Hell in America, and we are proud to welcome back Deborah Richter, Dr. Deborah Richter, who currently serves as president for Vermont Healthcare for All, an organization that educates the Vermont community about the structure and features of universal healthcare systems. I pulled a Daffy Duck. Deborah Richter, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
Well, it looks like we have some really good news in Vermont and in California for single payer this week. Tell us, what's the good news from Vermont?
Well, the big news for Vermont is that we passed legislation this week in our Senate and our House to be on the road, sort of to establish a roadmap to establishing a health care as a public good, and we hope as close a thing to a single payer as we can get by the year 2017. We're hoping that if we get federal waivers, we can actually do it in 2014. And this would be a system that would include everybody, we publicly financed, and also a way of containing costs within our healthcare system so that everybody would get healthcare that was of high quality and have access for everybody.
So you're calling your plan the Green Mountain Plan. And I know that PNHP, that's Physicians for a National Health Program, have kind of pushed back saying that it isn't a true single-payer system. And legislators actually, I think, under pressure from PNHP, kind of pulled all the single-payer language out of the bill. But tell me, how does the Green Mountain Plan work? Why is it almost like a single-payer plan? And why did the PNHP push back so hard?
The thing is, if you sort of talk in the strict sense of the word, you can't describe it as a single payer if there's multiple payers involved in feeding, you know, the healthcare fund that pays for healthcare for everyone. And that's in the strictest sense, they're absolutely right. It is not a single payer. The real important thing is, does it include everyone and does it contain costs? And is it a way for us to get to our goal? And the answer to that is yes. We are a state. We're not a nation. And we are restricted by the national bill, which the Affordable Care Act restricted us, that we actually even couldn't apply for waivers to get some of the money that would be coming in the form of waivers to help fund our healthcare system until 2017. We're trying to get that moved to 2014. So when PNHP is basically talking in the strictest policy sense, they're absolutely right. It's not a strict single payer. But where we're looking at it is this: does this get us to goal? And it could get us to goal. That is really, you know, the best answer to that.
We're talking to Deborah Richter from Vermont Healthcare for All, www.vt4, and it is the number 4 and the
word. Well, or 4FOR.
Either one, VT.
That works too.
www.vt4forsinglepayer.org. She's doing tremendous work out there. So help us understand, how does the Green Mountain Plan work?
Well, in the immediate sense, we set up a board. It's an independent board that actually will help look at ways that we can contain costs. We know that there's a lot of waste in the system, and we will have an independent board, meaning it's independent from the formal political process, and that we will nominate 5 people that will serve as this board. They will look at ways that we can contain costs. So that's sort of the first phase. We will then, in 2014, when we're asked to by the federal government, establish an exchange, where this exchange will help small businesses and individuals buy health insurance, private health insurance. And our state is actually, we're determined to heavily regulate the health insurance industry so that they will have to have a certain minimum benefit package. And that minimum benefit package will have to be uniform reimbursement rates for all of the providers. And so that will actually decrease administrative costs. So it's sort of a lot of complicated stuff happening.
But help us understand from the consumer end, how does it work? I need health care. I live in Vermont, and I've got the and this bill is in effect.
Well, this bill is in effect. What we have in the immediate sense is our ability of our insurance commissioner to be able to regulate insurance company rates. So that will actually decrease their premiums.
Right.
We will look for ways to save money in the system. The typical Vermonter won't see any change until 2014. At that time, we will try to get a waiver so that we could establish a single-payer system or as close to single-payer as we can get in 2014. If we don't get that, we have to wait till 2017. In the meantime, I think it's important that we are establishing a way of a true healthcare system where we will figure out how to solve problems. We don't have that anywhere in the United States of America. When you have problems with your insurance company or you have problems with the fact that you can't get a primary care doctor, there actually is no entity that you can go to solve your problems. And we will actually have that entity in place by the year 2014 that will help Vermonters be able to access care and access a primary care provider and do it at a lower cost than they would typically get if we didn't have the system in place.
So the Affordable Health Care Act put some obstacles in the way so that states wouldn't do kind of exactly what you are doing. And one of the big obstacles was moving out the availability of these waivers to 2017. Now, you've talked about moving it to 2014. What is the likelihood of this? Is this the same as Wyden's plan, Ron Wyden from Oregon?
Right. I mean, the question is can a state ask for waivers? I mean, a waiver basically means that you are excused from the law as long as you meet certain criteria. And the real question is do we need an act of Congress in order to do that? Or can we get Secretary Sebelius to just grant us waivers, providing that we provide high-quality care to all Vermonters
in that case,
at a lower cost?
In that case, could it happen before 2014?
The question is really not really before 2014. More than likely, this will be 2014. But the real question is, could it happen before 2017? And that is the question we don't know the answer to yet. But our legislature felt that it wasn't a good idea for us to wait to find out that answer. What made more sense was for us to put establish the legislation we wanted in place, and then ask the question, given that we had our structure outlined for them, so that would help them identify what it is that we want to do for Vermonters.
And your governor, Governor Shumlin, is fully expected to sign it into law, is he not?
Absolutely. On May 26th, he is fully expected to sign this into law.
Okay, so...
And that's the difference, by the way, I think, between what's happening now and what happened in the past, is the fact that we finally have a governor who is totally dedicated to the concept of a publicly financed universal health care system. And that has never happened in the history of Vermont, and that we also have a legislature that is dedicated to do that.
Yeah, I don't think it's happened in the history of this country, has it?
I think you're absolutely right.
I mean, in California, they just Senate Bill 810 just passed out of the Senate Health Care Committee, and everybody's really excited about that. But the governor, Governor Schwarzenegger, vetoed it twice, and I think that the expectation, at least on what Jerry Brown said before he was elected governor, was that he wouldn't sign something like that. So California really has a long way to go as compared to Vermont. You seem to be on the precipice of something completely unprecedented in this country. Do I have it right?
Well, I think so, although I wouldn't want to downgrade what California has done, because I think it's really an achievement to be able to get the issue on the table
so
that the average person out there says, wait a minute, what is a single-payer plan? What does it mean for me? I think California, unfortunately, is hindered by the fact that they have to get this in referendum in order to finance their plan, as I understand, and that makes it really politically difficult because the opposition, all they need to do is mount a big enough campaign to be able to kill that. And unfortunately, we now have a process where we have an independent board that is less susceptible to that kind of political pressure, and that's the purpose of having this independent board. So when we establish our financing plan, the financing plan will be based on science and not based on emotion.
Right.
And so that makes that a different process.
Okay, so let's run a scenario in which, obviously, I don't think that the Republican House is going to pass anything that would allow the date to move up to 2014. So things would have to change pretty dramatically in the House for that to happen, and we'll leave the Senate out of it because that's just a crazy place. But let's assume that we really don't get the waivers until 2017. Nothing changes in Vermont until that waiver is granted. What happens to the bill during that 5 years? What will you be working on?
Well, we're working on, which is something that's already established in the bill, is to actually to establish all payer rates where every payer pays at the same rate. They have the same rules, the same regulations, and the same reimbursement rates. So it's a lot like, if you want to call it the German model, where we Germanize our system, and that anyone that's getting health care in Vermont, they're actually receiving reimbursement rates that they provide the provider of health care, the same reimbursement rate. That actually decreases the administrative cost and actually establishes more of a German-like system in Vermont. And that's sort of what our hope is. We're also looking to do some more of a health planning where we sort of get more of the health care services that are available match the needs of the population rather than just sort of this profit mentality where these things pop up wherever they're most profitable. So we're looking at those other things that actually decrease cost in the system and also expanding our primary care and prevention. And those things also we know in other systems throughout the world are other reasons besides a single-payer system why those systems are much cheaper and offer higher quality care than we have in this country.
We're talking to Dr. Deborah Richter from Vermont Healthcare for All, www.vt4for.org. We're talking to Dr. Deborah Richter about the really good news in Vermont. They are going to be the first state to have anything like that even remotely resembles a single-payer healthcare system. The last time you were here, Dr. Richter, was we were talking about that we're still trying to articulate what the funding mechanism is going to be for this. Has there been any headway on that? Is that what you'll be working on in the next few years, whether it's 2014 or 2017? Can you give us any clues about where you think you might go to fund this program?
Right, and we were fortunate enough to have the expertise of Dr. William Shao, who's from Harvard, who's
right.
an economist, and designed the Taiwan healthcare system. And what he established was that we actually could pay for our system, this was establishing it in 2014, with an 11% payroll tax on employers and a 3% payroll tax on employees. And that would be that sum total, and it was a flat payroll tax, would be on all employers. And that would actually be enough to fund all of our healthcare system. That did not sit well with our employers in the state. And so the governor decided that it didn't make sense for us to establish exactly how we were going to pay for it right at the moment, since it wasn't going to take effect till 2014. And so he asked that the board come up with a financing mechanism that would be have the input from our employers and figure that out. And by 2013, they actually will have a plan in place on how they're going to pay for that. I can't give you an answer yet.
Well, that's a segue into, will you come back on the show, Dr. Deborah Richter from Vermont Healthcare for All, and keep us updated?
I sure will.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for being on the show. That was Dr. Deborah Richter from Vermont Healthcare for All, VT4FOR, singlepayer.org. They are doing tremendous work out there. Obviously, we are making huge strides out in Vermont. This is how it happened in Canada, province by province by province. And we will do it here in the States, state by state by state. Before I die, I want to see a national single-payer system in this country. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. We're going to be back with David Swanson and your calls next. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. Patience paid off in Vermont. And it looks like they're going to get a single-payer or a close to a single-payer health care bill signed by their governor and into law, the first state in the union. We're going to go back to the conversation that we started in the first hour regarding the death of Osama bin Laden. And the question we were asking was, is this vengeance or justice? And I was particularly trying to focus on the president's use of the word justice. He chose to use the word justice when referring to what has clearly been an assassination. So the numbers here, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. We are going to be speaking with David Swanson, but we want your calls. David Swanson is a supremely articulate advocate for peace and one of our very good friends here at Mad as Hell in America. David Swanson is author of War is a Lie and Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. He blogs at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. David Swanson has a master's degree in philosophy philosophy from the University of Virginia. He has worked as a newspaper reporter and a communications director, including press secretary for Dennis Kucinich's 2004 presidential campaign. He blogs at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. David Swanson, welcome to the show.
Hey, Adam. Great to be here.
I don't know if you were able to listen to any of the first hour, but we had some really exciting conversations with people. The board was lit up, and people were really talking about it. Did you get a chance to listen to any of it, or were you with your boy?
I will try to go back and listen to it. I've been out all day with my wife and our little boy, so I just came in the door.
Way more important. So David Swanson, davidswanson.org is here. The question that we were asking in the first hour, and what the question that my monologue raised was the idea, was this vengeance or justice? And the president's choice to use that word justice. He could have left it out of the equation, but he chose to put it in. So my question to you, somebody who I think really is able to think these things through, why did he put that in the speech? And do you think he knows the difference between justice and vengeance? I mean, do you think he understands it, or do you think he really thinks this is justice?
Well, he's not being innovative. He's not breaking new ground. I mean, the term justice has been used in this way for millennia. The idea of an eye for an eye is not a new one, you know. And,
right.
And it sometimes has been dismissed as a certain type of justice, lynch mob justice, Wild West justice, and so forth, which our most recent president, Bush, was a big, explicitly a fan of Wild West justice.
Oh, yeah.
But if you think in terms of behaving morally as what will make the world a better place the next moment from how it is this moment, you know, we're perfectly able in the case of, you know, unprotected premarital sexual promiscuity to say, hey, what makes the world a better place tomorrow and next week and next decade is not always what makes you feel good this instant.
Yeah, right.
And when it comes to public policy, right, when it comes to how we're going to address misbehavior on the biggest scale, you know, not just screwing around, then we jump to, oh, well, it's what makes us feel better this instant, even if the world becomes a more dangerous place and it, you know, and we destroy everything for our grandchildren. Hey, what makes us feel better this instant is the moral thing, you know, is justice. And I think if you look at, if you treat sort of criminal justice and punishment as something that should look forward as opposed to backward, which, you know, God knows Obama is a big fan of. Never look backwards, you know. Never prosecute corporations or spies or torturers or murderers.
Or presidents.
Always look forward. Well, justice looking forward means that you take into consideration things like prevention, deterrence, restitution, reconciliation, not satisfying my thirst for vengeance, right? And then Al-Qaeda announcing their desire for more vengeance. And you know that when and if Al-Qaeda gets some big vengeance by killing a bunch of Americans, not a single, you know, every single newspaper today and yesterday printed Al-Qaeda demand, you know, pursues vengeance for bin Laden's killing. Not a single one of them will ever mention that again. No, you know, it will all be, why do they hate us? Why do they hate us? There's no possible reason they could hate us. You know, and then we will demand vengeance again, and then they will demand vengeance again, and it will make everybody feel better for a moment. You know, and then they'll have this hangover that consists of more people getting killed.
The cycle perpetuates. We have a call on the board, so I'd like to take it with you if we could, David.
Yeah.
Cassay, line one. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America. You're on with David Swanson, who blogs at davidswanson.org.
Good day, my friends. How are you doing?
We're doing well. Cassay, welcome to the show. Welcome back, I should say.
Hey, no problem. I think that this whole situation has a bit of an element of both vengeance and justice, mainly because whenever you see somebody, let's give a situation such as bullying. If you get bullied by a kid for like, you know, 2 or 3 months, and then all of a sudden somebody walks up to the bully and smacks the bully, and if you see it, you're like, oh my gosh, that's justice.
It feels like justice, but is it justice?
You feel like this is, but it's too early in the game and on such a major league incident to really say whether or not it's justice. We have to have everything compiled together, and unfortunately, we're not having everything compiled together, and it's going to take a little bit of time before we really you really see if it is or not justice. Now, the question I have to pose is, are these actions justifiable?
Well, that's a really good question. Kasey, thanks for the call. David, we got about a minute left. So do you want to respond to that call? I mean, is it justifiable?
Well, let's flip it around. We go into Iraq illegally. We tear up the place. We kill over 1 million people. If a death squad of Iraqi commandos came and imprisoned George W. Bush to haul him away, shot him in the head and the chest, and declared justice has been served, would Americans universally dance in the streets and say, hooray, justice has been served? Or just sadistic Democrats? You know, I think when you turn it around, if Cubans came and took Posada or somebody who's been convicted of terrorism in this country, would we say justice has been served? Or would we say this is out of control anarchy?
This is Matt is Hell in America with David Swanson and Adam Klugman. We're here all hour with David Swanson. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ. Give us a call, 248-0620 or 1-866-452-0620. We're here all hour discussing vengeance or justice. We'll be right back. Welcome back to... Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Progressive, Portland's only progressive talk station. We're talking with David Swanson, author of War is a Lie and Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. And we're discussing the recent action against Osama bin Laden, which I am classifying as an assassination. And we're trying to tease that apart from the president's use of the word justice in his speech. I still don't know why he didn't avoid that word altogether, because I don't see this as justice. And I want to talk to David Swanson, who blogs at davidswanson.org, and get your calls this whole hour on this subject. So, David Swanson, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
So let's talk about an uncomfortable subject. You know, I know that many years ago, his name went right out of my head. Malcolm X came out when John Kennedy was shot and said that, you know, the chickens, this was a function of the chickens coming home to roost in a way. So let's look at 9/11. It's a very unpopular position to take, but help us understand how U.S. foreign policy has helped to breed this whole environment of hatred that finally manifested itself in the action called 9/11.
Well, I don't take pleasure or satisfaction or any sense of justice or out of anyone being killed, whether it's Kennedy or the victims of 9/11 or Osama
right.
bin Laden. Nobody should be killed ever.
Right.
I mean, it is sort of stupid when someone blows up buildings in your country with airplanes and you knew it was coming but, you know, didn't do anything about it, to sort of avoid any knowledge of recent decades of world history, any awareness of the fact that we've been invading and occupying these countries in the Middle East for decades. We've been overthrowing their democratically elected leaders. We've been propping up dictators, stationing troops in places that offend them, and aiding Israel in its crimes and so forth. And that this guy that we've now assassinated as the supposed mastermind behind this crime, you know, eventually says, here's why we did it. To completely ignore that, and then to modify some of those policies to take the troops out of Saudi Arabia, but across the board to escalate those policies, to go in massively into Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan, and to continue and worsen the policies in Israel and Gaza, and then, you know, to go around with this stupid, bewildered innocence about why do they hate us, you know, that's a completely separate discussion from, you know, I'm supportive of
right.
mass murder, you know.
But somehow when we have that conversation, when we want to talk about our own culpability, you know, that's what we get attacked for. But I still don't think it's cause to back down from the conversation. One of the things is I think that when we confuse revenge with justice, it kind of keeps us blind to our own culpability. I mean, isn't that one of the functions of this kind of being blinded by this emotional reaction of, yeah, this is justice?
Right. People think that culpability or blame is something where you find the person who is to blame and then you hang them with a rope and everybody else is not to blame. Culpability is not finite. There's tons of it to go around.
Right.
and the fact that, you know, that we've predictably increased global terrorism during this past decade of the so-called global war on terrorism, that we've done that and it was predictable and predicted and that we're continuing it, doesn't take any blame away from terrorists. Doesn't
right.
excuse it, doesn't justify it. Murder is murder. But, you know, when the Nazis murdered, you know, when the war was over, we put the worst of them on trial, and you can claim they were unfair trials. You can claim it was one-sided. You can claim that we've never followed through on our commitment to make it two ways and so forth. But we at least went through some process, at least some pretense that there was going to be the rule of law and that people, if found innocent, would be acquitted, and if found guilty, would be punished. And now, you know, we don't do that, and that is that would be much more powerful. I mean, and it's because we're afraid. I mean, among the reasons why we do this is that Americans are terrified to put someone on trial in our country. They think that they would magically slip through the prison walls and kill us all.
We're talking to David Swanson, author of War is a Lie and Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. And let's go to call, David. I have a call in line one. Jimmy in Portland, you're on Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. Our guest is David Swanson, davidswanson.org. You have a question or a comment?
Yes. I actually called earlier, and I didn't get to finish what I wanted to say. I was saying that I think the reason, this is just my opinion, I think the reason why we're so confused over this issue of revenge versus justice is because there's a larger question that we have to answer as a country. Are we going to consider ourselves to be idealistic people or pragmatic people? And what I mean by that is, like, I really believe that unless we answer this question, this is a sort of moral schizophrenia. Because we can't make up our mind. And we need to take a stand and decide first whether we're going to be idealistic people, you know, people that believe in absolutes, black and whites. You were quoting Abraham Lincoln earlier, I understand.
Yes.
Or are we going to be a people that just selectively goes back and forth in between these two worlds and want to go into the practical side and be very subjective, gray area, nuance, judgment call and everything. See, this is what's causing, in my opinion, this confusion where we can talk all day long and go in circles around these questions and not really get anywhere. We're just like, it's confusing. It's frustrating to me. We need to figure out who are we? Are we both pragmatists and idealistic people? What are we, you know, I mean, some could even confuse idealism with spiritualism. Who are we?
Well, I think that's a really good point, Jimmy. Thanks for the call. Okay. So let's take this on, David. You know, is justice somehow impractical? Maybe in the short term, not in the long term. What about Jimmy's comment?
Well, the world is a very, very complicated place, and ethics need not involve absolutes. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not covet. You know, there are going to be times where the best thing to do is the exception to the rule. But when the rules of thumb and when the laws have become evil, right, then the majority of what you are doing is wrong. You're not talking about the exceptions anymore, right? When you have authorized presidents to make laws single-handedly, to launch illegal wars single-handedly, to fund operations secretly and single-handedly, to lock up anyone for any reason, for any time outside of any legal process, to torture, to assassinate Americans, to assassinate non-Americans, right? You're, and when your president can announce such things, and it's considered disloyal or disobedient to question, to wonder why you couldn't have a legal process. If you can murder this person, what about the next person? What good did murdering Saddam Hussein do for us? We had years of war. We've been trying to murder Gaddafi. We keep murdering his kids and his grandkids. Is that good? You know, we're trying to murder this American, Awlaki. Is that permissible? I mean, it seems to me we've moved to the place where the general rule is so evil that if we do anything good, it's going to be the exception.
Well, right. And I think the thing that about Jimmy's point was, I don't want to be called an idealist because I'm against unilateral assassination or because I'm against torture. I mean, I was reading in your blog that they say, you know, these things are somehow cleaner, you know, to do things this way. But I don't want to be called an idealist because I'm willing to take a stand on moral principle about right and wrong. And I think that that getting characterized as idealism is part of the problem for me. We're going to go to another call. We're talking with David Swanson. DavidSwanson.org is the website where he blogs. It is an absolutely sensational, articulate, visionary kind of blog. I go there all the time when I don't know what I think. Hal, line two, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. You're on with Adam Klugman and David Swanson.
Hi.
Hi. What's up?
There's naturally, there's no easy way to this, but the way I've been looking at it is when we go into somebody's country and mass force and just kill almost, you know, a lot of innocent people, why don't we, before even go into any of this, make sure that we find out who the perpetrators are, you know, the ones that are really, that we're after, and leave the locals as much as possible alone and maybe get them to work with us by rewarding them. I think the local people are in a position now where if they help us, they're going to get killed, and if they don't, they're going to get killed. You know, the incentive isn't, you know, they're in a real bad position. But if they could feed us, I think they'd feed us more information that would be helpful, and actually go in and get the people as quietly as possible, the least amount of killing. I think the countries themselves would appreciate it more.
I'm not sure what you're saying. Are you saying I'm not sure what you're saying here, Hal.
We need more covert action.
Yeah, okay. Thanks so much for the...
We need it, but know what, you know, get the blessings from the local people, too.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much for the call, Hal. So he's saying more covert action. I think I would like more overt action. I don't know about you, David. I'd like to, how about hands across the world? How about building real bridges to peace like schools and hospitals, real honest-to-goodness nation building? I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, I think if assassinating bin Laden was one choice and a decade of war with over a million dead and economies ruined and the natural environment destroyed and doctors telling women not to have kids anymore in Fallujah, if that was the other choice, I would certainly pick assassinating Osama bin Laden, right? If they had done that 10 years ago instead of 10 years of war and we have to be strip searched in airports and all of the madness that with all of the destruction of our nation and other nations of the past decade, yes. But to say we need that rather than, as you say, an overt action, enforcement of law, putting him on trial, putting him in prison. No. And to say we need more covert actions, I mean, you cannot say that unless you are the president, because you don't know what covert actions we've got. We've got special forces in 75 or so countries. We don't begin to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, to say we need more of that is just blindness. We don't know what we've got of it.
It's the wrong direction. I think we both agree on that. We have still more calls, David. Blue, line one, you're on with Adam Klugman and David Swanson and Mad as Hell in America. What's up?
Yes, I'm calling in because I think people sound idiotic and ridiculous over this.
What do you mean?
Because after 9/11 happened, all we heard and all people stood up for and give their lives and went over there for, give up their lives in the USA, went over there for with no draft, was to kill this guy, Bin Laden. Now they got what they wanted, and they don't want to support. And all I heard was support our troops. Well, Bush put up a wanted poster, wanted dead or alive, smoke them out. And this justice that was given to Saddam Hussein in that kangaroo pajama party court that he had, that's justice.
Blue, thanks so much for the call. What about it? What about the way Saddam Hussein was treated in that trial? It seemed to be a bit of a joke. I don't think that's an unfair point.
I couldn't quite catch what the caller was getting to.
I was having a little trouble, but I think in the end she was saying, you know, I was saying, you know, let's go through the process of justice. This is important for us. This is how we define justice each and every time, and there's rigor and discipline. You know what? That's my music. So let's come back and answer that question. Dave, hold on. We've got your calls. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. We're on with David Swanson. DavidSwanson.org, WarIsACrime.org. These are tremendous blogs. The numbers here are 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. We're going to continue this conversation about justice or revenge with David Swanson for the rest of the hour. We want to hear from you. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. We are on the line with David Swanson, author of War is a Lie, and blogging at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. David, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
So I have a million questions I could ask you. I love talking to you. This is David Swanson, davidswanson.org, a great friend of the show and somebody who I go to when I'm not sure what I'm thinking. We're going to go right to calls. Line 3, Dave, welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. What's up?
Klugman, neighbor Dave here.
Hey, neighbor Dave.
Great conversation today.
Thanks.
You know, what I found particularly troubling in all of this was the jubilation after the fact. But, you know, I think your callers, everyone is sort of overlooking one really important difference in this particular situation. Unlike the Nazi trials and unlike a conventional murder trial where you've got an individual who's squirming trying to deny his guilt, in Osama we had a man who not only admitted his guilt, but he gloated over it and threatened to continue the same behavior. So I have to come down in this one on the side of justice. I think justice served. He was his own judge, jury, and executioner. Follow what I'm saying?
Well, David Swanson, why don't you take a crack at that? What do you think on that? I'm not sure I'm going all the way there. I don't think this was justice. What about you in that context of, look, you had somebody who was not denying his guilt. He was openly displaying his guilt and gloating it. Does he somehow convict himself at that point?
We have false confessions all the time in this country in our domestic criminal system, and we do not, when there is a confession, skip the trial as a rule. I mean, now we lock people up without any process whatsoever, but as a rule for the past couple of centuries, whether someone has confessed or not is absolutely irrelevant. We don't know why they confessed. We don't know what it meant. If you believe bin Laden was going to confess and plead guilty, well, then you put him on trial, you tell the world the crimes he's done, and you let him plead guilty. Of course, we were not about to do that, because then how do we get around giving other people trials? We give him one. And do we want him talking about what his motivations were or how we supported him decades ago or how he escaped the past 10 years and so forth? No, it's much cleaner, as a CIA agent told me, to kill him. It's capturing him, trying him, torturing him. None of that is clean. The clean thing is to eliminate him. And the fact that he has supposedly publicly confessed, which I'm not disputing that he did, is absolutely irrelevant to us and our morality and our legal system and our presentation of our sense of justice to the world. Leave him out of it.
Neighbor Dave?
Well, right. We're all entitled to our own opinion, but I mean, again, he does anyone doubt that was a false confession?
Yes, millions and millions of people. There are protests in Cairo yesterday where every single person, according to the New York Times, doubted his confession. Much of the world and much of this country doubts his confession. You want to cure that doubt? You want to convince the people who don't agree with you? You put him on trial. Here I am in Virginia, where a few years ago we almost killed a man who had confessed, who was innocent. The DNA proved he was innocent. They had badgered him into a confession. There are false confessions for a million different reasons and have never, ever been considered a justification for skipping a trial.
Neighbor Dave, thanks for the call. I got one more call I want to move on to. David, good answers all. I also think it speaks to a higher value, which is we go through that process, like you were saying, because that's who we are. And we don't accept false confessions or confessions as evidence without trial, because it's important that we go through the process of defining what justice means each and every time, particularly in cases as heinous as this. Let's go to line one. Patrick in Portland. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You're on the line with David Swanson.
Hi there. Yeah, I'm just wondering if David and you feel as if, A, as if we have the right to go in and apprehend him in the first place. And second, you know, say, you know, you're a Navy SEAL in that moment, and as they're saying, he was given the chance to surrender and he did not surrender. So what is, you know, what's the SEAL's choice at that point?
Well, that's a good question. Thanks for the call, Patrick. First of all, do we have a right to go in and apprehend him?
Well, that's very much disputable. I mean, Italy a couple of years ago convicted a couple of dozen CIA agents for kidnapping a man off the streets of Milan and sending him to Egypt to be tortured by the guy who's now running Egypt. And they've been convicted. These are Americans living happily around the country here in the United States. If Italy comes in and grabs them, whether they kill them on the spot or take them back to Italy to serve time, we would certainly object. We wouldn't think that was okay. But when we do it, when we go into another country, we think, oh, well, that's different because it's us. We just needed to put him on trial rather than kill him. That's a big question.
David, as usual, I could go on for a whole nother hour. We've been talking with David Swanson, davidswanson.org. He's the author of War is a Lie, Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency, and Forming a More Perfect Union. He blogs at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. David, as usual, thank you so much for being here. It is a pleasure to bat these really important ideas about with you. Will you come back?
Absolutely.
All right, great. David Swanson, davidswanson.org is the website. Check it out. It is a great blog. When we come back, we're going to put all this behind us because tomorrow is Mother's Day. And I want to hear from you about your mother. And if you are a mother, I want to hear about what motherhood means to you. We're going to go to our producers, Al Nowakowski and Kat Jarboe in the Windy City of Chicago. They've profiled mothers that they admire. I'm going to talk a little bit about my mother, which is frightening. When we come back.